Hello, this is Leon Daniels, and welcome to Lunch with Leon, a series of podcasts available from itthub.net. I invite some interesting people from around the world to come and have lunch with me and share the conversation with you. So I'm having lunch with my friend Dave Joshua from Optibus. Dave is the number one man for Optibus in the UK and indeed even in Europe. But Dave, you only just came into the industry quite recently. What did you do with your life before you were in transport?
Yeah, hi Leon, and thanks for the introduction. I've been 2 years in the bus industry and in transport, and it's people say young whippersnapper, so great. I'll take that. prior to that, and this is definitely sort of my area which I've enjoyed is around optimization. And also around transformation, the T word, which some people love and some people, don't necessarily get on with. And I think transformation itself and what we did in previous companies is really take, as an example here, we've all heard about cloud. People think that's the white fluffy stuff out the window, and indeed it is, although on days like today, it's not really in existence. But in terms of cloud and what that really is, which is using somebody else's data center services and all sorts of wondrous bits of technology behind that, that didn't start from just on its own. It came from a concept which was originally data centers, and some people will have those in bigger companies. Some people might even just have a server in the corner. And before that, of course, you then had mainframes, and some people still have mainframes actually, although it does say do not touch on it. But in terms of where that came from, that whole technology evolution, that was part and parcel of my background. So looking at ways in which we could really help enable businesses using technology, but also adapting to the internal change in the people side to really drive what they do in for the future. And that's across a huge broad span. I mean, you look at Google and Microsoft and Amazon Web Services and all that. I mean, Amazon sold books originally, and now its biggest business is cloud. And you can just see the change there. And that's part of what I wanted to bring into the transport industry. I think, there are great opportunities for all of us to evolve, and I think we have to. And that's really sort of, my background is definitely on that side. But I also have to say that I do enjoy, although my children don't, me now talking about which variety of bus is now coming down the high street.
So, and in Optibus, I think what we've got here, firstly, I don't think people always appreciated, I didn't used to appreciate it, that Tel Aviv is a hotbed of technical innovation. And what I've learned about it is that they have one advantage over the rest of the world, apart from the beautiful climate, the lovely seashore, and the nice places to eat and drink, is that Israel still has military service. And that means that young people go for 2 years into the military, where since there's not a lot of fighting to do, they learn some skills. And technology is very much the sort of skills area in Israel, and in particular in Tel Aviv. And as a result of that, we get lots of technical innovation startups coming out of Israel, don't we? Which is really very exciting. And in the case of Optibus, I'm going to ask you just to describe it, because I started out thinking that it was just another scheduling system, but I might as well be comparing my latest computer with a Sinclair ZX Spectrum. Tell us the Optibus story.
Yeah, sure. You started in a good way to let's talk for a second about Israel, Tel Aviv, and military service. I think one of the really interesting things, or fascinating things for me as well, right? I mean, I'm a Brit. I went to university. I think there's wondrous education system here, but I also think that education isn't all about just in terms of the curriculum. I think that what it does do, especially when you look at the way in which young graduates as well from university, although, you know, in Israel, they do go to university slightly later, because obviously they do have that military service in the middle. What you have, if you look at sort of average 25-year-old in Israel versus in, you know, in Western Europe at least, tends to be a very different structure and approach to their job. And I think particularly then it comes down to development and technology and so on and so forth. And I think that's definitely something we've benefited from here at Optibus. I mean, you only have to look at our two co-founders, both, again, you know, military service, but went through education, did very great things after university as well. And, you know, bringing the concept. So again, our CEO, Amos, did a lot of work in machine learning back before it was actually sort of a marketing term, if you will, at the very early edges of that. And I think, again, just in the way of bringing that into the platform, and again, things like a platform that is self-service. I mean, all these sort of things, people don't think about that. They think, oh, it's a bit of technology that I have to use. But if you imagine, you even look at your mobile phone and the way in which people use applications, they'll change the color, they'll change the way you log in, they'll change, I mean, all these sort of things to do with technology. That's what we are bringing, and will bring more of that evolution to, you know, again, to these platforms, because it's more than just planning and scheduling. That is the important bit underneath in terms of the infrastructure and so on. But it's also, again, then about how people adapt and adopt and change.
That's interesting, because my experience with the scheduling systems, and for our American listeners, scheduling systems, was that we were thrashing the living daylights out of the processing power in our systems in order to do some very complex mathematics, because we were feeding in, were we not, the public timetable, the different journey times between points, the driver's requirements, the trade union agreements, the types of vehicles and so on, and asking it to find a sweet spot in the middle of all that that gave us the most miles, the fewest man hours, schedules that were capable of being operated, duties that the staff wouldn't go on strike and so on. And I can remember in my London bidding days that we would press enter at 5:30 on Thursday night and go home. And when we came in on Friday morning, it might just be finishing, having monopolized the server all night, basically.
Exactly.
And what Optibus does is it does in minutes what used to take us hours, because that's where I think that people don't quite get the idea of the cloud. So my photographs are in the cloud, but my photographs have just sat there. What's happening here is it the computing power of the cloud. And if I get this right, when you pose a question in Optibus, go away and optimize these schedules, the job goes to 100 computers, the report to 50, the report to 20, the report to 5, the report to 1.
Yep.
And that's why you get your answer back so quickly. So for me, Optibus is right at the beginning of its technological roadmap, whereas many of the systems that I have used in the past and people continue to use, we're actually flogging the living daylights out of them, just trying to squeeze a bit more out of them.
So exactly.
And so that must make it a really adorable project and product to talk to people about, because it's so versatile, right?
It is, and I think there's that question of, and I've heard it a few times, so the words, it can't be done, is something that normally I grin about. So I'll give you two small examples. So one, actually during COVID, and I promised you I wouldn't mention COVID too much, Leon, because I'm sure we're all bored to death with talking about COVID, but I will just once. So look, we have been helping a number of non-client, small, very, very small operators globally. And one of the challenges that, you know, that was posed from either sort of the Excel-based things, systems of this world, or the sort of the older stuff, is it takes such a very long time for everything to happen, right? So whether that's, you know, doing implementation, whether that's just even doing things, to your point about, you know, going over the weekend. And with COVID, you had to act now, right? You couldn't wait a week. You couldn't wait 5 days. You had to do it today. Otherwise, your business and everything else that you needed to get done was at risk. So one of the things that we did do was actually onboard In fact, over 100 small, medium operators and local authorities globally, and gave them our platform for free during COVID so that they could complete a number of tasks they needed to do and go away. And we had some being done in sort of 3 or 4 days. And I was told vehemently by one particular individual that isn't possible. You cannot do that. You cannot get people on board and do that in 3 or 4 days, or even in a few weeks. And of course, that as I said, the point that we have there is with the technology and then the flexibility, and I think the other word is agility here, we have an amazing ability to do those kind of things. And then the second element, which I'll touch very briefly on, is about electric vehicles. And the only reason I'm going to go down that rabbit hole for a second, because it is a rabbit hole that we could spend a long time talking about, is the number of opportunities or iterations that you now need to do with electric vehicles is mind-boggling. Well, that's because it's mind-boggling. You need a system that is built to capable to really deliver that. And I think that's the other bit. We had a client do 68 different scenarios for one electric route in London. 68. And that was done in a couple of hours. 68 scenarios. And again, just to put that in perspective, that is on electric buses, which of course is all the charges, the electric miles, the cost, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So yeah, just two examples there, I think, where it really does sort of put lightning speed in there.
Yeah. You and I are also interested in creating new tech jobs for people. So if I think back to those people that I used to work with doing schedules, there's a few things I know. Firstly, the door was always firmly locked and you weren't allowed in without invitation. Secondly, yes. One of my scheduling offices, they insisted on occupying the bit of the building that overlooked the railway station so they could watch the trains moving in and out. But it was a dark art, wasn't it? And it was a dark art that these people learned using graph paper and pencils and rulers. Their processing was in their brain. And as a result of which, that they produced was perfectly okay. It was certainly the best we could have at the time. And when we decided to move from doing that on graph paper to using computers, in practice, the computers only did the bit in the middle. They did all the early stuff and they did all the finishing stuff and they just used it to do some of the calculations in the middle. That's not a skill that we teach anymore. For me, what's exciting about this is that these are much better jobs. These are not jobs for people who want to lock themselves away in a room with a piece of graph paper. These are for kids coming out of school who like solving puzzles, who like using computers, who perhaps play computer games. They do all of those things. And that's a much more exciting job, isn't it? And I think that one of the things this new technology can do is we can replace a load of dull, tedious, monotonous human jobs, which are suboptimal, with really lovely, exciting, mentally challenging and stimulating jobs that young people like. And is that your experience?
Yeah, so it's a very good question, Neil, and I think there's two answers. Look, I think there's a huge element, and I've heard now, as I said, 2 years, so I'm a sprightly bunny in the bus sector and so on. But I've heard multiple times that schedulers are a dying breed, it's dying out and so on and so forth. And yet scheduling is incredibly important to the business. And I 100% agree with that statement. So I think there's two items to this. One is to transform and really give the power of this system and its capability to the industry as it stands today, and then look to adapt and change to, look, I mean, speaking very openly here, right? I mean, I look at my children and what they're doing versus what I do, and I can see a generational gap, right? And I also can see that the way they use technology, even more than myself, is, look, it's in different ways that we didn't even think possible. And that's really where we see, I can see huge benefits looking at the way in which these jobs evolve, right? So we talk about network planning, scheduling, commercials. I mean, there's sort of silos, if you will, almost. I mean, there's an opportunity further down the line for different elements to sort of come through. And I think there's, you know, people asked me before, can it be done? Is it possible? And the answer is yes, definitely, because I've done it before. And we've done it in other industries as well, where people have a skill, which is definitely a very hard skill. You know, you can't sort of just pick it up off a book and do it in a day. But likewise, you can have a system that allows you to really kind of flex your mental skills and think about what you could do, what's possible, you know, what could my business achieve? What could we do differently in a certain area? All those things which people tell me right now they don't manage to do on their own. And I think that's definitely something that we see for young people in particular that's very exciting. You mentioned, sort of problem solving. I think that's a huge element to attract a whole new generation to the industry.
And if we think about this whole optimization business, that's the next development in business generally, isn't it? Because businesses that can shave 0.5% or 0.75% off a hugely recurring multi-million pound recurring cost is going to save a substantial amount of money. And that's what we're doing, isn't it? We are in the same way that the app-based private hire people have optimized the supply and demand for private hire cars, the same way in which Expedia and others have done it, again, making those optimization decisions that my travel agent can't do because he doesn't understand me. So therefore, I'm going to go online and I'm going to optimize the options. I'm going to trade off the price I want to pay for the times I want to travel against the amenities. And I am going to effectively optimize that. And so for me, optimization is something that humans do personally for themselves. But actually in business, you need some extra computing power because the obvious sweet spot, humans are not very good at that. They find a comfortable spot, but it's not necessarily the most optimal for the business in terms of revenue, in terms of cost and so on. But for me, this is hugely exciting. So you're also on record, Dave. I remember you once said that once you've developed this some more, you are going to revolutionize the bus industry. So all of our listeners would like a clue as to where you're going to start.
Yeah, and that's a really great question, Leon. And I, look, again, I'm not going to give you the 2-hour version. I'll give you the short one, if you will. So I think there's a huge opportunity in front of us, and there's also a level of bravery required, right? So I'm not going to even say the word COVID. I'm going to say Corona, right? So Corona itself is a catalyst for change. And I think one of the greatest things that this industry needs to recognize is the impact that it can bring to the individual. But to do that change, to make that change, it has to change itself. So the perception of the business, and I know there are individuals out there who absolutely recognize the need to change the perception, whether that's diversity of your workforce, right? Women and men, different races, different backgrounds, different creeds. Looking at not just that, but in the technology side, looking at not saying, oh, that's a bit of tech, but actually saying, you know, it's like you've got your lights, you've got your, you know, got electricity, but actually, do you have internet? That's a necessity now. It is a utility. It's not a nice to have. And I think that's another piece. And look, speaking openly here, we can look around us as the world evolves. We mustn't lose sight of the fact that there are traditions and we need to have them across the world, whether that's, you know, legacy type buses that are from, you know, a long time ago, whether that's uniforms and, you know, all such like. But at the same time, we need to adapt and change to fit in with the rest of the world in order so that, you know, the next generations coming through use it just like brushing your teeth. And that's the thing for me is if you wake up in the morning and you tumble out of bed and you fall onto a bus and you go down the road and you're basically halfway to somewhere you're going, and then perhaps you use a bicycle or you use an electric scooter or whatever other form of transport you're going to do, or perhaps get the train, that means effectively you've reached that point of perfection where somebody isn't saying, oh God, do I have to use the bus now, right? Or, you know, how am I managing to get that service? Instead, it just becomes something that is part and parcel of your common knowledge in life. And I think there's a number of factors outside of that that obviously we can do, you know, that's not just industry related, but the industry itself definitely needs to get there.
For example, when I turn the tap on and water comes out of it, I don't need to know how a tap works. I don't need to know how the water was obtained, who owned it, what processes it went through. All I know is that when I want water, I turn the tap on. Same for electricity, same for gas. It seems with public transport, the user needs to know so much about it before he can use it. It's a bit like an entry exam before you could turn the tap on. So what you were just describing is transportation that is just intuitive and is just there, seamlessly going on in the background, that you just hold your hand out and it's there for you. Is that what you're describing?
Yeah, and look at the way in which, so again, COVID, I said I wouldn't mention it.
That's three times now for my COVID-free episode.
Need a COVID box. Yeah, so another pound in. Look, COVID has forced many, many people to buy online. And that has forced the hand of many shops in particular to suddenly go about doing a lot more in terms of e-commerce and so on and so forth. There's a lot of e-commerce drivers now being hired. I mean, there's lots of things happening on that front. And I think one of the big side effects as well of this time period is that we are now starting to understand that we need to know our customers. And that means we need to also know what sort of business we are. So we are a utility in the sense that we want to think people are switching a light on or getting a bus is the same item, but also that you have to evolve to the point where you know everything about your customer, right? If you look at the guys that deliver your food, they've got a profile on you. They know exactly what you order every week. They know roughly when you're going to order, and they know also perhaps where you are and what sort of social type you are and so on and so forth. And that's something that's quite scary, I think, to the transport industry, perhaps not so to new incumbents, right? I mean, there are people sort of trying to do that as an external technology. But if you look at it from that perspective, the more we know about them and the more that we can adapt our business to fit those requirements. So it's, I guess it's that word agility again. It's the agility of the industry to adapt to that change that is going to mean success.
I wonder if you'd agree with this. Then, not only you're saying we must be much more focused on the customer and what the customer wants and how the customer behaves and everything we can learn about the customer. Whereas, in fact, as an industry, we've been awfully focused on the bus and how it works, how to get another few thousand miles out of the gearbox and all of those things. So we've been inward facing. And there's lots of good examples of how that has improved recently in terms of marketing and information and so on. But just thinking about the systems that we employ, it seems to me there are too many people in this game. I don't mean competitors. I mean that there's information about revenue and ridership that gets tipped out into a spreadsheet that goes before some planners. And those planners think about what changes they might make to match supply with demand. And then they do some costings and maybe do some scheduling and make some plans, and then that eventually gets developed into operations. And as soon as operations are deployed, then that produces more data, and that data about ridership and so on, and we go back into it. So I just described my central heating system. But unlike my central heating system, which is built by one company and works in one continuous flow, what happens in our industry, all those things are done, those are all bits of jobs done by different people, which somehow get moved from one system or one mechanism to another. And every time you do it, you lose a bit on the way, don't you? And is that the optimization also that we can look forward to?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that life now is about optimization in itself, which, you know, again, is uncomfortable for some people. So, you know, people talk about maximizing their days. You know, in the old day, it was just doing your job. No, not 9 to 5. I think that the way in which it evolves is also not something you do once, right? This is a realization and a wake up to understanding that we need to continuously optimize in order to progress the industry alongside others. And also, I think the other bit to that then in terms of optimization is also not to compete necessarily with ourselves, but to compete with the other areas of not just transport industry, but the things that are eating away at the ridership and at the margin. And that, again, is the is the other sort of realization. I know we're starting to see a lot of peer-to-peer sharing of things like passenger numbers and so on, but we need to get to that point where, you know, the competitor isn't the bloke down the road also driving buses, or the woman, actually, let's be really clear here and do that. But I just mean, we also need to think, how can we work together more as an industry to ensure that that element is delivered quicker? And optimization is definitely one of the biggest to do, and it's not being done by 15 people doing one task and managing to do that and then repeating it. It's actually with a continuous process with a system in place to ensure that success.
Let me just try this on you, because we could have this conversation could go on for hours. So please come back and we can pick up some of the comments that we'll get from our listeners. But let me just try this one. This is the last revolution we thought of the show. It is possible there are too many layers in this, isn't there? There are the manufacturers of the buses and the equipment. There are people that supply the energy. There's the manpower and the ownership of those assets, which involve finance companies, involves operators and employers, and so on. There's lots of layers.
I think that both vertically and horizontally, if you look at it as sort of a noughts and crosses, if you will, we potentially have too many layers, or perhaps too little control between different areas. And I think there's a sort of blend of, I remember the debate about whether, you know, public transport is a utility or is a retail, right? Again, that's a massive area where you sort of wake up and realize, okay, actually, we need to think about this in a very, very different way. And how might a retailer do this, right? Again, just as an example. But I think the other big thing as well, Leon, is if you look at, and we always say, look at other industries, right? Look at what the airlines are doing or what somebody else is doing. I think there's two items. The one is, if you don't evolve, you die. It's as simple as that. That is a nature takes its course, and, you know, there is a predator and a prey in everything, even in business, right? And I think one of the other elements to that is it's not about ensuring that, you know, you suddenly become the predator of other operators. It's about saying, how do we evolve as an industry, also as a company, by the way, to ensure that we compete with the other providers, the other mobility services, and so on and so forth, whether that's forming new partnerships, whether that's building off the back of new technology platforms. But effectively, it's all about evolution, or unfortunately, dying.
That's amazing. Dave, we've already broken the record for the length of the podcast. So I know this is going to be a great thing for us to do in the future. So Dave, please come back, because these are the sorts of things we all should be talking about some more. We'll get some other guests on the program as well, and also get that together, because this is fascinating. We're talking about here, not nuts and bolts, we're talking about the evolution of the industry itself. So El Supremo for UK and Europe, Dave Joshua from Optibus. Thank you very much indeed for joining us today for lunch. Lunch, as always, in Tel Aviv is absolutely delightful. And we look forward to being back in the UK for the next episode.